because after dinner, everyone ought to have a cigar. So I tried it. Well, the rest is history. I'm still smoking stogies. I love it. And he introduced me to something really good, because I'm a stud. I'm ballsy. I don't take no shit from anyone. I smoke my stogie anywhere I want. I don't have to find a hideout place like you.
Alrighty, welcome back to the second episode of Fireside Smokes. So it's me, Recon.
And I'm Salazar.
It's just me and Salazar tonight here. We're gonna be talking about some interesting stuff pertaining to Salazar's early life there, growing up in Portugal, you know. And we'll compare and contrast. What it's like being in America now and all these things. So it should be an interesting talk. I don't know. But what's going on? What's the matter, Salazar?
I said indeed.
Indeed. Yeah, are you I don't actually know. I didn't even ask you prior to the talk. Are you smoking anything tonight?
No, I just have a cup of water.
Oh my god, he's not even drinking, this guy. Holy shit.
No, of course not. I don't drink every day. It's only a couple days a week.
Nah, but this is like Fireside Smokes, fam. Like,
get out. You know what? Time. You're right. I'm gonna go down to the basement and get some.
Alright. Well, while you're doing that, I'm actually smoking a Kentucky Fire Cured. This thing is like essentially like the barbecue Slim Jim of cigars. This thing is like, it's just got this taste. What'd you say, Salazar?
Where'd you say you picked that one up?
I picked that up from the Havana Club in Warwick, RI, and I had seen this. I know Drew Estate makes them, and I usually like everything that Drew Estate puts out. Oh boy. Oh no.
It's our old buddy.
It's portable.
Only 300 so far. Not much. Nope. I just drive that thing to work.
Sorry, folks. You know, Salazar's gonna go get comfortable.
Yep.
So yeah, I made you do it. Salazar's gonna get a nice drink there down there. Nice little bar. Little bar. He's pouring it up too and everything for you folks on here tonight. So you get the whole shebang on the show. The real Portuguese experience.
Yeah. All right, I'm all set.
All right, excellent. So, yeah, the flavor is very interesting. It's literally like a barbecue. It's shaped like a Slim Jim. It's long and thin like a Slim Jim. And it tastes like a barbecue. Like, the best way I can describe it, like a mesquite kind of wood kind of flavoring, and I actually liked it a lot for a while, but I had never been to a place that sold them, so
that actually sounds pretty good. I'm not gonna lie, I've never had a cigar that tastes like mesquite. That's gotta be interesting.
Yes, very, very good, very good stuff. I like it a lot. I put a few new cigars that I've never tried.
I still got to bring you to that shop near my house, too.
Yes, yes. We have to check that place out for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
All right, so you're all set now. You got your drink. You're chilling. You're relaxing. You're good?
Absolutely. Fire away, brother.
Okay, all right. So, well, you know, why don't you get into a little bit of what it was like there growing up in Portugal? I mean, you were born there, obviously, right?
Indeed. I moved here when I was 10 years old. I was in 2005, so that makes me 23. It was
And
certainly a very different culture. No.
yeah.
What were you gonna say?
Well, I was just gonna say, like, so were you now, were you born on the mainland or were you born on the island?
I was born on one of the islands.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. So you're, would you, so you're Azorean?
Yep. Well,
Okay.
Portuguese Azorean.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is there actually a difference?
No, not really. Azoreans are just Portuguese colonists. There was also a lot of Dutch that used to settle on the island because it was the main trading hub in between the Americas and Europe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I always wondered that. I had heard in the past from like my, again, it seems as though, as we talked before, my stepmother and my stepbrother are Portuguese, at least in part, and they had a very different experience with their Portuguese family as the norm with Portuguese people, as you've told me, because they didn't really get along with their family all that well. And to
Yeah.
be honest, yeah, I think that has something to do with the fact that they're not 100% Portuguese. Like, but that's they're very mixed with other things, and I think that might have something to do with that, to be honest. But
The culture's probably diluted or Americanized since.
but I had been told by them that there was some kind of a friction between the mainlanders and the islanders, kind of in this kind of sort of friendly competition in which they one always kind of, you know, bashes the other in some kind of way, and there's like a.
You'll find this with a lot of Portuguese people. They're very tribalistic in a sense. So people from the north will occasionally be made fun of because they have a weird accent, and people from the south will occasionally be made fun of because they also have a weird accent. It's like, and then people from the Azores get made fun of, so we make fun of them back, and then the people from Madeira also get made fun of. It's like a little rivalry in between us all.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, Italy does the same thing. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck that was about, ladies and gentlemen, but it disconnected me because my screen decided to shut off. So I guess that means it just stops recording.
That's really annoying.
That's really, really annoying. So just be aware of that for yourself there, Salazar, when you're doing it. I don't know. What was the last thing you heard me say?
The rivalry, the friendly rivalry that you mentioned, that your side of the family exposed you to.
Okay, all right. You didn't hear me talk anything about Italy.
I heard you get into it, and that's when I dropped.
Okay, all right. So basically, all I was saying was that Salvini's new government wasn't trusted because they changed their name to the League this year. Prior to that, they were the League of the North, in which they advocated for secession of the northern part of Italy from the rest of Italy.
Yeah, the secessionist movement has been pretty big, especially over the past 20 years in Italy.
Yeah, so the reason why the League won this time is because they said, you know what, screw the secessionist message. Italy's going to come first as a group before we can even discuss this.
Italy
Unfortunately,
shouldn't be broken up. That's absolutely dumb.
no, I agree. There is some obviously cultural differences between the north and the
Oh
southern
yeah, of
part of Italy.
course. As
This is the.
we've established before, Europe is a very culturally diverse place. Even like a region such as North France and South France are completely different.
Yes. Italy has had this unique history, unfortunately, of being very coming together under one kingdom, spreading out again, separating, coming together again, and separating, coming together, fighting over one at one another. And it really took like a unifying a few times in history, obviously Roman Empire being one of the major ones, of course, but a kind of uniting under one idea or one person. Mussolini was another example, and he even had a hard time with it, uniting all of Italy. That was one of his big tasks.
Oh, yeah, Rome.
Yes, because they are definitely Italians, but they are, you know, they have these issues with one another. They very stubborn. Very stubborn people. So, I mean, as much as I think a lot of like Sicilians and Southern Italians agreed with Salvini, they still voted for the left-wing candidate simply because they were afraid that Salvini was going to be for the North only and fuck over the South, which is not the case so far, has not been the case since he's got in. But it's unfortunate that those old rivalries still kind of rear their head from time to time and prevent progress for the nation as a whole. So I was just curious about that. That was the only reason why I was asking.
Yeah.
What are some of the key differences? I mean, there's probably a ton, but what's some of the key differences growing up in a place like Portugal versus growing up in a place like, you know, America?
First of all, the food.
Oh, of course.
I can tell you most of the meat and dairy that we get is a lot tastier than it is here.
Love that. I can believe it.
Oh, yeah. Dairy, especially like milk, is allowed to be pasteurized, so it's not really a big deal there.
Yeah, so
meats usually come fresh from farms or, you know, butchers and stuff. I mean, even the village that I grew up in, we actually had a huge butcher shop. They did like pork and beef and stuff.
Wow, holy shit. No kidding. Okay, so do they sell like raw milk?
Yeah, you can buy raw milk. I've drank it.
Okay, yeah, because raw milk's like wicked good for you, and that's like illegal in America.
Yeah, pasteurized milk is illegal in America. It has to be non-pasteurized.
Wait, no. To be honest with you, I think it's the opposite.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it's all American.
Okay, yeah, yeah. It has to be pasteurized.
Yeah. It has to be like super pasteurized, which is really bad actually for people. That's why we have such a lactose intolerance problem in America too. Aside from the fact that we have a ton of black people running around and they don't really have the gene because their ancestors didn't develop
and
around. Yeah, and Asians. Yeah. That's true. They didn't really do the same kind of like drinking animals' milk and stuff like that our ancestors did. So you kind of have this lactose intolerance problems with them. But that aside, a lot of whites have lactose intolerance problems now.
Indeed.
Because of
Indeed.
This, yeah, pasteurization thing,
and,
which gets
peanut allergies are actually related to that as well.
Are they really?
Yeah, peanut allergies have been found to be more related with not drinking raw breast milk.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Well, I always kind of knew that fucking all these allergies that we have in this fucking in the world today are kind of like unnatural or as
no,
a result
they are.
Of thing. Yeah.
They most
you know?
Are.
Because there's something up with that. Like there's no real we grew up in
pollen.
Nature.
Especially pollen. Pollen's gotta be the weirdest one.
That's totally weird, and it's the most common.
Yeah, it is.
Which it's like we grew up in nature around trees, like especially Europeans.
Indeed. Farming all the time, so you breathe in pollen constantly.
It makes no sense why we'd be all of a sudden be like we need to like seal ourselves in a box to get away from pollen.
Yeah, take a bunch of meds for it.
Yeah, no, that's fucking nuts. Now, we had discussed, I think, on the first episode of the main show, why you got the name that you got and who it's attributed to. And actually, interestingly enough, today at work, amongst the many Portuguese people that I work with, there's one Portuguesa lady, you know, she, Fatima, I'll leave her name at that. I'll just say Fatima. She was born in Portugal. She lived there a good chunk of her life and then moved to America a couple, maybe 20, 25 years ago. And I brought up Salazar today outside at the table. And her response was overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, most of the old people are.
Yeah, she said her grandfather, her father and her grandfather used to talk about Salazar all the time, how great he was and how, you know, there was one guy that was going to come and be a second like Salazar, but he died in some kind of a helicopter crash, and they say that the government killed him or somebody killed him. And she was telling me the story. I'm not sure.
She had infiltrated the country at that point, so it was probably had something to do with them. They were the ones that actually incited the revolt against the Angolan War.
Oh, wow.
Indeed.
Okay. So, that's interesting. Yeah, she was trying to ask me if I knew, and I said no. I said, but I have a lot of respect for Salazar. I said, I have a friend that is from Portugal that was raised a good portion of his life in Portugal. And, you know, his family absolutely loves Salazar. And, you know what I'm noticing? And no insult to you, obviously, Salazar, but it would seem that the Portuguese here that have a problem with Salazar are the ones that ran away from Salazar or the ones that did not want to actually stand by their country.
Yeah.
When it hit a rough spot. Like this is something that it actually kind of appalls me. It seems like the ones that, and I mean, they're good people. I'm not knocking them as people, but in this area, I think it's kind of disingenuous. It's kind of messed up. It seems like they've turned away from Salazar because he was making them do something, or like they had to serve in the military and they didn't want to, or like, oh, you know, the times were tough after, so they left, and it's all like these people that are like really bitches, essentially. To be honest. I mean, it seems like that. It seems like the ones that don't like them are the ones that like wanted to like run away from any duty to their country.
Well, that's what it's not just one story. Generalizing it would be kind of insulting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's different reasons for different people, obviously, at the end of the day.
Sorry to interrupt, but my uncle actually served in the war and then he moved over here.
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, I wouldn't say that everybody that moved here is that.
Yeah.
But the ones that I've met that have a specific problem with him.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely agree with that. And they're probably old, like born pre-70s, right?
Yeah. Yep. So you're looking at people, you know, I told you one of them was like, hey, fucking Salazar, that asshole, could I? Fucking make me drive the truck, could I? The military, I don't want to drive the fucking truck. I'm like, you know, like this guy was like driving trucks, like delivering tires or some shit to other military bases. He didn't want to do it, so he left. He deserted and moved to America. Come on. Like, you know, yeah. I'm not a big, like, I'm not a big imperialist guy myself, but like, you're driving a truck, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not telling you to go out there and die.
It probably wasn't that big of a... He probably just didn't want to fucking be there, you know?
Yeah. So you know, there's that. But anyway, moving on. So, I don't know. It's very honorable, and I respect the fact that you look up to him and stuff, you know, and you're honest about it. And because, again, it seems like the majority of the Portuguese that I work with, unfortunately, are the opposite when it comes to that with him. So, it would seem that Portugal really has a really strong sense of itself still to this day.
Absolutely.
And I think that's, I don't know if you want to get into that at all. When you were living there, I mean, it was extremely nationalistic even then, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, soccer games were nationalistic. I mean, we had events that were nationalistic, like holidays. I remember this one holiday. It's called the Day of Kings.
Oh, shit.
Basically, celebrate, like, our great kings that liberated us. And people just put, like, flags over their porches and stuff, and there's just, like, a festival in town. It was a great time, you know?
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah. I mean, nationalistic events happen all the time. I can remember every year we had a procession for the church, you know? And people would make these trails of colored mulch. And they make all these beautiful designs, and then the procession walks through it, through the whole village and stuff. And it's just a really, really nice thing to see, you know? And then afterwards, everybody gathers at the church for a big feast.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. So when you say village,
I'm talking like 1,600 people.
Okay. Okay, so very, 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 very small.
Indeed, very small.
And was there like a lot of like neoliberalist kind of like restaurant chains?
There wasn't a single one around. It was just mom and pop stores, cafes, and butcher shops. Pretty much it.
All local.
A pharmacy, I remember. Yep, all local. Pharmacy, I remember that. And there was a couple doctors in town, and that was pretty much it. Oh, and they had the senior center, too.
Wow. The
senior and youth center, sorry.
Yeah. So, now, interestingly enough, okay, so, America kind of was founded on that sort of Puritan work ethic, right? Where you have this obsession with working to a point where you forget about your family, forget about holidays, and you become extremely hyper-individualized and you don't care about anything that, like, tradition or anything that matters. That happens in America. Now, what is the work ethic like, would you say, in Portugal, if you can remember that?
I actually can. My dad, I remember him having like a month off every year, and he would take like, I think it was July off every single year. And then we'd do like a bunch of stuff throughout the whole month. He really only used to work about 5 days a week. Sometimes he'd work six. He used to work on a ship. So sometimes he'd be out for 2 weeks. Sometimes he'd be in for 2 weeks, you know, it all depended on how the shipment was going, etc. But from what I can remember, they have a law in Portugal that if you work mandatory, if you work 40 hours, you have a mandatory 1 month big vacation every year.
Wow. Yeah. 1 month.
It is. Yeah, it's pretty high up there. I believe it's 1 month. Well, let me just make sure.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. It's starting to unfortunately degrade in Europe now, thanks to, you know, institutions like NATO, where you have this extreme
and the migrants.
You have like this American influence of Europe, which is happening in the sense, and I don't mean the America that I love, that my cultural America, but I mean, you know what I mean. Sure, the audience knows what I mean when I talk about this neoliberal, like, internationalist Americanism, which is starting to slowly creep into Europe, unfortunately, and you're starting to get this desensitization. I didn't even say that right. Whatever. of like the history and the ruins that are 1,000 years old that they walk amongst every day to get up in the morning. They're forgetting that for their iPhones. So that's starting to happen there now too, which is really sad and unfortunate.
I definitely see that. Absolutely.
It's very, very sad, and I hope it stops in its tracks before it reaches its full goal in countries like Portugal. You know, I think that focus on God
I
having the
definitely
children,
agree.
you know, I think that is so awesome and something that used to be in America at one point. It used to be. And it isn't anymore. You know?
Yeah.
It isn't.
And
you know, you I mean, just drive through any old New England town. I mean, you'll see a church on every street corner. I mean, one could argue maybe that was part of the problem, is that there were so many churches and so many individual preferences for freedom of religion that you had like atomization even in your own community, because in one small village of like 200 people, it was a community of like six different churches where nobody would talk to each other outside of those six churches. And so in the community, you'd have like these little families that would just speak to one another and not talk to one another as a giant community as much. Now, that wasn't universal in America, but I think that was part of an issue, perhaps. Whereas places like Portugal, overwhelmingly Catholic, correct?
Indeed. I believe it's 80%.
Okay, yeah. So you kind of have that universal uniting religious factor, and having the church be the gathering point of the town, and having the feast there, and knowing everybody by name, and this person's cousins, aunts, uncles, you know them.
Sorry, it's 84.5%.
There you go. Even better.
Yep.
Very, very, very interesting stuff. I've always noticed with the Portuguese, and I mean, this seems to be very prevalent, very, very prevalent with Southern European immigrants that came to America later on, and the Irish also, interestingly enough. It seems as though they did not forget, but they have a very strong ethnic solidarity with where they came from at one point. So you have a lot. Now, don't get me wrong, they conform to the American culture very fast, in the sense of they are proud to be Americans and they consider themselves Americans, but they don't forget their old country or where they came from before, and they don't forget those virtues and those traditions that were passed down to them. That's why you see a lot of Irish people with the American flag and the Irish flag, or the Italians with the American flag and the Italian flag, or the Portuguese with the American flag and the Portuguese flag. They you don't see that with the English, the French, and the German.
No, of course not.
You know, and now, you know, I think it's worked out very nicely. I think a lot of the culture aspects and the food and the celebrations, the holidays, have actually merged into the real American culture and suited it very nicely.
Yeah.
Americans, you know, celebrate St. Patrick's Day. They celebrate
Christmas. I mean, Christmas is a huge deal in Europe, man. Like, I don't know if you know this, but even when I grew up there, I remember the time was fucking magical. They would decorate the streets. They would put lights up. They would have like mass on the 24th, like at midnight. You know, the mass that they always have then.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a big thing, dude. Christmas was like the time to be, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't really so focused on. I mean, was it focused on gifts in the sense of cheap garbage from Toys R Us?
No, it was more focused on food. We'd usually try to get expensive food like shrimp and lobster and stuff, and we'd have a big feast. I remember at my aunt's house, she had the big shed in the back. It was like a huge barn shed. And we would always have a huge feast there every Christmas. We'd bring like shrimp and lobster and like a bunch of expensive foods. Just really what people would buy.
See, I can relate actually still to this day now on my Italian side. This, I always say this, is the Feast of the Seven Fishes, I believe. And they do this Christmas Eve, and we still practice this to this day at my dad's house. We still eat the seven fishes. So we have like, you know, clam. We've edited it, Americanized it a little bit. So you have like Clams Casino. You have like you know, steamers. You have shrimp cocktail. You have the antipasto. You have the aglio.
I love antipasto. Sorry. I love that stuff.
That's the best. That's the best. You know, we have a lot of things, and that carried down from my grandparents and their parents who came here to this country. It was definitely, we got the gifts, don't get me wrong, but it was definitely family. Family and food was the focal point early on in my life. I remember at my grandmother's house when I was very little. The whole family from both sides were in that house for a feast. I mean, everybody. This person's cousin, uncles, aunts, people that lived all over New England would come down to the small apartment, and everybody would be in there. Unfortunately, even now, while we celebrate some of the traditions in feasting, we have a small family unit now. It's kind of sad. Actually, they didn't, the old timers, you know, they didn't, I think they took it maybe a little bit too much for granted, and their children, you know, the boomers.
Yeah.
they didn't really have as many children. They didn't teach family as being big in the community sense. It was like, oh, I have one kid, two kids. We'll just eat our dinner just by ourselves with our little individual nuclear family unit. And we'll let the rest of the family eat their own dinner somewhere else. And I think that's actually a problem, because it was not like that early on with my grandparents. It was, everybody was the family. There was no little nuclear family when it came to holidays. It was,
I agree,
everybody, like a village.
Yeah.
And that's good. I was gone, you know, and I actually want to reinstitute that. You know, once I have kids, I want to make sure that they understand the importance of that they have more than just one kid, or they have more than just, you know, that they understand the importance of carrying on the family name, and they understand the importance of who they are as a people in America and growing. And I think that's important. And I'm sure you would agree.
I would. Absolutely, 100%. Tradition is key.
Absolutely. Without question. You know, it is a major focal point in your identity. If you don't have that, a lot of fucked up shit will take its place if you don't have that.
I agree.
you know. Now, how did you move now from Portugal to America? Like, did you take a boat or did you fly?
We flew on a plane and we came through Logan Airport.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was actually kind of funny. My mom said, she told me that I should take us sweater, because we came here in December and it was really cold, and she said that America was really cold, so I was like, I'm sure it won't be that bad. And I can just remember walking off the plane and I'm like, what is this? I was so cold immediately.
Yeah, because you guys got pretty good weather over there in the Azores, huh?
It's all right. It usually doesn't get too hot or too cold.
Oh, yeah, it's right. It's balanced all year round, pretty much, huh?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's pretty cool. I was just curious because I've met some that have come over on boats. They've like actually sailed over here and moved here that way. I wasn't sure. You know, I know there's different ways to get over here. But now, when you got here, how was it? When did you start going to school?
I started going to school pretty shortly after. I think I started going to school around February. I already knew a little bit of English because they taught English in school along with a couple of other languages. So when I got here, picking up English was kind of easy at first. It wasn't really a big issue, but the problem is I was put in a bilingual class, and my bilingual teacher was Spanish, and she kind of had a hatred for like the Portuguese kids in the class, and she would always pick on us, and it was kind of neat.
Really?
Yeah. She was from Colombia. She moved here when during like the drug shit that was happening.
Wow. Also, was she like white Hispanic?
I'm not really sure. Yeah, kind of. A little bit.
Huh. Interesting. I'd expect like a mestizo to be that way towards you. I wouldn't really expect that.
Looking back at it, I should have fucking. I made fun of her in Portuguese sometimes. Portuguese kids.
little Portuguese kids, like, hey, could I?
It was funny.
So was it hard? Like, I mean, interacting with all the American kids, kind of.
I learned very fast that they're not very touchy. I kind of learned that in an embarrassing way. I also thought that school ran weird because school in Portugal is way different. Here, you had to be at school at 7, you had to leave at 3. You know, the usual schedule. But the weird thing about it was that lunch was only half an hour. And in Portugal, school runs from like 8 to 5, but you have like an hour and a half total in breaks. There's like a breakfast break that's like half,
wow,
an hour, and then there's a lunch that's an hour.
Wow, and I mean, now could you like? I know in France, I believe I've read they actually let at least in high school they let you like leave.
Yeah, you could go home and eat and come back.
Oh, shit.
You could, this school was pretty big. It had a lot of resources. They had a pool. They had a soccer field. You could pretty much use anything. They had a library. You could go to the library. You could go to the swimming pool and swim. You could go play sports outside, or you could just go home and sleep and then come back, you know?
Yeah, wow, that's... Yeah, you don't see that much in America. It used to be that way in America too. Not so much the schedule.
Yeah, the first thing I noticed when I got here was that school kids are very babied. Even like at that age, I was even like 11, 12, you know, I started to notice it was very prevalent. They baby you guys on everything, what you eat, where you go. I mean, you even have to ask to go to the bathroom. And then you have to sign out, and then you have to use a pass to walk on the hallways. You know, it's kind of fucking, it's like a prison.
Yes.
Oh, the second thing was that the school food here was fucking terrible, to be perfectly honest. That was one of the main things that I really hated about school.
Yeah, the food? Oh, forget it. Dude, the food was fucking atrocious. The quality in that food was bad. The milk, even like the companies they were, just fucked up. Definitely, with their feeding school kids when you're developing your brain and shit, it's no good.
No.
America did not always have a Department of Education. America used to have very localized school systems once upon a time, and they were abundant in resources too. I mean, even in Woonsocket High School used to have like a golf team. They used to have a frisbee team. They used to have like boxing. They used to have tons. You can go through the auditorium there and you can look at all the championships they've won for the different sports that they've had. What do they have now? Basketball, field hockey.
And football, probably.
Yeah. You know, like it's been dramatically reduced, like drastically.
My high school here was pretty much the same way. They used to have like a bunch of different language classes. They have Russian, German. They used to have, like you said, a bunch of different sports. I don't know, man. It's just I don't get it. You know, why get rid of all that stuff? Oh, and they used to have an ROTC program, and they got rid of it for some reason.
Yeah, see, we have the ROTC. They have the ROTC. I was actually a part of that. I did that. I did that. I made it to first lieutenant in rank when I was in that. That was pretty cool, to be honest, because, you know, you had a sense of order in a school like Woonsocket. Everybody wanted to be a fucking retard. You were the guy walking through the school hallway with a uniform on, which actually, you know, some people would make fun of ROTC. I never took it that way at all. I took it as an honor, actually, to be able to like show that I was not some friggin' gun-toting, gang-banging retard. Like, I actually like wanted to listen and do, like, submit to some higher authority or order, you know, which I kind of liked a lot growing up with. Having that, it was a plus for Woonsocket. I will say that. But yeah, you know, dude, you know what it is? It's that diversity. The diversity in America causes problems because a lot of these different stocks of people operate differently. And when they can't keep up in certain areas, then in order to avoid being called racist or prejudiced, the school will just cut those programs. That's why the schools will leave basketball and football, but they get rid of like the really white sports like golf and shit like that, because it doesn't matter that your school's still majority white. That doesn't matter. The bottom line is that we've got no child left behind, and we got to make sure that all the black kids feel comfortable, all the Hispanic kids feel comfortable. So we're gonna have to cut some corners here. We'll just get rid of some of these old, useless American sports and programs. We don't need wood, you know, we don't need wood class or anything like that. We don't need that, you know, crafting with your hands and learning how to like basic carpentry skills and trades. Nah, we don't need that. We just need no child left behind. We need to make sure that everybody, you know, has this sort of simplified standard of math and certain simple, like, it was really the way that America has handled its educational system is very bad. Very bad. Without question, you know. Are you still there? Salazar? I don't know. I think you cut out. I might have disconnected you. I think it did. All right, folks. I'm going to put in a break here. I'm going to see if we can get old Salazar back here in a minute. All right, Salazar, you good?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me, sir?
Yep.
Okay, good. I don't know. Maybe did your screen go black or something? I saw that you...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I was just basically talking about... the audience heard.
Oh, I heard everything you said. I just couldn't talk to you, though. It was weird.
Oh, okay. All right. We got about... We're about like 40 minutes into this now, anyway, technically speaking. But combining the first part with this one, we're like at 42 minutes or so. So we can go for a little bit longer if you want. It's up to you. I don't know if you've got to go right up this moment or you want
Yeah, I may have to go soon. I'm getting pretty tired.
Oh, all right. That's cool. That works. Well, I think we covered some quick ground there. We're talking about some different things, you know,
Yeah,
and questions on.
we should do this again though. Talk about like the differences.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's something that'll interest people to understand, you know, somebody coming from a European nation, which, by the way, does not get much coverage. In groups like the alt-right, unfortunately, I don't know there's any particular reason why. It just you don't hear about Portugal much for whatever reason. I don't know why. It's very odd. You hear about mainland Spain, you hear about it, you don't hear about Portugal. I think there's just a shortage of many Portuguese people in the movement, to be honest. So it'd be interesting. I
We've
think.
largely gone unnoticed anyways.
I don't know. I think that's kind of a bad thing, to be honest, because I think there's a lot to learn from Portuguese people and from that culture. It's very interesting. So we'll definitely have to do this again. We'll do another episode of this and of with me and Salazar in the future, guys, and we will go even more into detail about the differences between modern America and Portugal.
Sounds great.
All righty, yeah. So, thanks, guys, here for tuning in to another episode of Fireside Smokes. Sorry it took so long to put this out. We've been trying to get this out, get the right time. Me and Salazar have drastically different schedules, so like, you know, he goes one way, I go another way, and we pull back and forth. So we finally decided to squeeze this in and get this done tonight. So, thanks for doing this, Salazar.
No, thank you.
So as usual, you guys can send an email. You got any questions to avgoysovercigars@gmail.com. All the links where available will be on anchor.fm/avgoysovercigars. We have a Snapchat. We have an Instagram. We have a Twitter. You can find us at twitter.com/altstogie. we have a Twitter account. Now, we'll see how long that fucking lasts. Snapchat, Instagram, we have all nine. Plenty of ways to keep in contact with us. If you want to send a voice message with a question or any comments, you can send it to right here at anchor.fm/avgoysovercigars. And we will catch you guys Friday this week for the next episode of Goys Over Cigars.
Sounds great.
All righty. So God bless. Hail victory, guys. You guys. Have yourselves a good rest of your week, and we will see you guys Friday.
Good night.
Good night.